Welcome to the One Mic, One Voice show, building the collective conscious, a show that is created to give space where your voice, ideas, and informed opinions can be heard, appreciated, and debated. And I'm back, Michael Eric Owens, with my co-host.
It's your boy, DT.
Oh, we are back in Blackened Studio.
Man, welcome back, Mike, man. We've been so fortunate to have you make your trip and make it back here safely, man. It's good to see you. And I'm glad that we can be able to get back here on the mic and do this one mic, one voice.
Well, I tell you what, man, you have been truly missed. And the second half of the show, we're going to get into my trip to Wales. Amazing trip. Some interesting observations on that side of the pond, if I could say that. But, you know, it's amazing to be back. It's amazing to be back in the studio. Doing it up again, and we, you know, we've had these breaks in action, but we come back today with energy.
Yeah, man, there's been a lot happening actually since you've been gone. You know, both positively and negatively that we have to speak of it. But you know, it's all been a positive thing for me personally. You know, so I've had some things to share with you.
Oh man, I'm all ears. I'm all ears, and I can't help but notice that. You know, Ben Carson is, I don't know if I want to start our you know, part two off on Ben Carson, but, you know, he's up in the polls and, you know, Trump is, he's like discombobulated, man. He doesn't.
He's pissed, to say the least. You know, it's like a little kid, man. It's like, you know, at the beginning of the campaign race, these guys couldn't even decide amongst themselves that they were not going to agree to not slander each other along the way. And that should have been signs that, you know, something is wrong here. So now we got Ben Carson, you know, not even close to what I would consider a presidential candidate.
Yeah, yeah.
But going up against somebody else who is not equally qualified. Yeah, but, you know, they both had these very baby ways of, you know, dealing with their issues, like two little boys, two little children, especially Trump, you know, responding as soon as he figured out that, you know, Ben Carson had taken the lead, you know, throwing out some slander on his Twitter, you know, to say, hey, man.
I don't know about those 7-day advantage. You know, I mean, it's crazy because Trump was one that he was an advocate for his polls. I mean, he was talking about how he's winning in every state. He's winning everywhere. And now he's saying that the polls are not necessarily scientific.
Right. That's funny how you can justify it after the fact.
I know. It's kind of crazy, man. And again, you know, I have my issues with Dr. Carson. You know, I mean, he's a great surgeon. Obviously, history has played that out. But, you know, man, I don't think the brother can keep his eyes open, man, for like 5 minutes. Man, he always closing his eyes, man. Is that like, does he do that when he operates?
I'm not sure. And, you know, I've actually encountered someone else like that. When you're talking to them, they're responding to you, and like sometimes they kind of like, you know, blinking their eyes or closing their eyes in the middle of the conversation. I'm like, man,
wake up!
Punch you in your nose in the middle of, you know, the conversation. You got to be on.
I mean, he is surgery, closed his eyes, like, oops, oh, wow, oh, okay.
That is not acceptable behavior for a surgeon, somebody in a serious position.
Man, keep your eyes open, man. Visine or something.
But yeah, I mean, rather be him than Donald Trump. I mean, I don't think that the party is in either position to call it successful.
No, I think the Republican Party, what it is clear. I mean, all jokes aside, I mean, they're a party in trouble. That's why you have so many people vying for that nomination. You know, we're going to get into something that Governor Christie said in the second half of our show. But he's at 1%. I mean, it's like, why are you even talking? Yeah, you're at 1%. You have no chance. Matter of fact, I have the same opportunity that you have, and I'm not even running.
Even running for the president.
Zero. Okay, so man, go somewhere and be quiet, man. Nobody want to hear from you. I'm like, serious.
I'm DT, and I approve this message. Right. That was your campaign.
That's it. You know,
right there.
But yeah, and you know, we can't, man. We cannot overlook what just happened in South Carolina with the student down there. Talk a little bit about that, DT.
Man, I work in schools, and, you know, I've seen police officers interact with students, and I've seen the attitudes that they take on when they have to be in this authoritative situation, when you have teens who are being defiant, you know, really just being kids. You know, we've all gone through that and will continue to as long as life persists, that you will have teenagers who are defiant, who are disrespectful, who are just disconnected from the people around them. And in a position of a law enforcement officer, you know, somebody who's supposed to be, in a, you know, protecting and serving, you know, by that fundamental definition, I would see fit that there would be some type of, you know, positive relationship between, I mean, when that, when those situations occur, especially on a school campus where kids are supposed to feel safe. So I can't take a, you know, this authoritative stance against a teenager, you know, a child. So I don't know. A lot of the, situation to me was very uncalled for. It spoke to me in a way that showed a disconnect between the student body and the law enforcement officers. I don't know if he was an on-campus officer, if he was just, you know, in contract with the school. But, you know, that, that little girl had nobody else to defuse her before it even had to get to that level. They went straight to law enforcement. Like, that has, you know, there were so many more steps that probably could have been taken before they got that deep into it.
And you know what's amazing to me is how can we believe that getting law enforcement involved in school disciplinary issues is a good thing? I mean, law enforcement, okay, is law enforcement. This, she broke the rule, okay, and maybe don't have your cell phone in class. She didn't break the law, okay? So why in the world would you have a trained police officer in hand-to-hand combat skills walk up on a little girl? I mean, let's just be honest, man. This is a girl.
A child, man.
Man, he threw her so far across the room, he had to go. He had to catch up with her. You know, I'm like, really? Is this? What is this, man? And DT, we're not even talking about what impact does this have on the other students viewing this, witnessing this?
Man, I've seen those kids in that classroom helpless because, one, there was nobody there to protect that little girl from what happened to her, and they weren't in a position to help her at all. So, you know, you have kids who are just kind of trying not even to look that way because the impact and the influence that the police officer's presence had in that room.
Absolutely.
During that, you know, really tragic act, I mean, act,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So what, if I'm a student, what I'm thinking is, I see it's wrong, I know it's wrong, but if I try to step up and do anything about that, yeah, this police officer, he's already at 100.
Yeah, he's already on it.
I mean, he going to slam everything that come his way, period. You can't even, listen, folks, I've been in the car, okay? I'm driving. I get pulled over by an officer. I even try to ask the officer why he pulled me over. He snapped. He already at 100, right? He ain't snatched me or threw me. Nobody could intervene because it had become a police officer doing what he or she normally does, enforcing the law with strength and power and authority. And that little girl, man, I you know what? I don't even want to hear. I hear people saying, I was listening to the radio today, well, you know, she should have. Well, okay, let me ask you a question, man. So if I break a rule, that means you can just slam me down and you can just treat me like I'm less than. If matter of fact, if I did that to my animal, I'd be arrested.
Yeah.
Hello? If I took my dog and threw it across the room and somebody found out and called the cops, I'd be arrested for that. We treat a human being less than we do an animal. This is, man, this sickens me.
Man, I agree, man. Like you said, that guy, he had a point to prove from the moment he walked into that building. He was going to make it clear and send that message to the rest of the students who were in that classroom. I mean, it's lucky, you know, now that we do live in such a technological world where those moments can be captured and brought attention to, because otherwise, you know, who would have believed that it went that far or no, that in detail
nobody.
Exactly what happened in that video that disgusted all of us, you know, really happened. You know, how common would that have been that somebody would just take that for your word to say, man, we need to do something about this, or there may be something really going on here.
Did you hear MSNBC interviewed. Her name is...
And speaking of, you know, the girl did. Mm-hmm. There was a girl who did try to stand up for the girl, and she did.
That's what I was talking about. Well. Yeah, that was Nyla Kenny. She was interviewed on MSNBC, the Chris Hayes show, last night, and she said this Officer Fields is known as Officer Slam. Hmm.
So he already has a reputation.
He got a reputation of just slamming people. Okay. Yeah, he got a reputation for, you know what? I'm going to introduce you to the pain.
And then look at his background. The guy was a power lifter.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and he's had other accusations against him for being overly aggressive. And clearly, man, I don't know. I don't know if her mother and her father are alive, man. But I can honestly say I have a daughter. And I don't care how much power lifting you done did. You could have been out there lifting your Ford truck. I'm gonna be honest with you. You had to slung my daughter across the it would have been on. Okay. I'm just telling you, you know, when we devalue life here, a cell phone? Yeah. Are you kidding me? This girl is gonna be traumatized for the rest of her life. She will never forget this incident and those that witness it. We'll never forget it, man.
I mean, and now, like I was saying, you know, with technology, social media, these things will never go away. They're out there on the internet to stay. As long as she's alive, as long as the people who are involved are alive, they can go back and relive that moment like it was yesterday or the same day they're looking at it. And it's that type of things that, you know, drive life in a negative direction when later on you're thinking, well, how do I ever get past this when it's always right there in my face?
Always, never go away. She'd be 50 years old, be able to turn on and look at her greatest hits of her being thrown across the room. You know what I mean? It's crazy, man.
And, you know, now they're so relentless. You know, they'll take that video and do all types of edits to it.
Oh, they will, man. They put it to a little hip-hop beat or something. 5-10 years
from now, what that video will be, you know, and how disrespectful it'll be to that young lady.
And, you know, I mean, it's... When I watched it, I have to be honest, DT, I was just like, this, man, is this real?
Man.
I mean, did this guy really grab her? She's still in the desk.
Whole desk back, man.
I'm like, he the Hulk, man. He done grabbed her and just flung her out the desk. And then I heard the sheriff. Man, I don't even know why they give people microphones sometimes, man. He gets up there and he talks about... Well, it appeared that she looked like she hit the officer.
What? Her eyes? With a glare?
She was trying to protect her head, and so she flung her hand. You know, I don't know. And this is the same thing when they say, well, he was resisting arrest. Well, you were choking him. You know, I don't know how they expect for you not to react to force being inflicted upon you. It's a natural reaction. Yes. If you're hurting me, I'm gonna try to protect myself.
Survive.
It's survival. Mm-hmm. And so to sit up there and try to, you know, and this is what this covert racism is. Somehow we're gonna justify this girl being treated. She should have turned her cell phone off. She should have complied. Well, you know, all that is cool. You know what? But she didn't deserve to be treated like she was less than zero, like she was less than an animal. She didn't deserve to be treated the way that she was, DT, and it's sick. And let me tell you something. If that had been a black officer, okay, flinging around a white student, what conversation would we be having?
Mm. That definitely changes the dynamic.
Okay. Okay.
But, man, it's even funny to think about that even in my mind. It's just the opposite situation. It's like, man, I know that's not going to go the right way. You know?
You know, and, or you know, just flinging around a young white girl like that, okay? I mean, we would be outraged over that, man. And we should be outraged over what we witnessed. And, again, it's just it's sickening. Okay, but furthermore, how often is this happening in our school system? Yeah, I mean, this is not an isolated incident. Mm. I mean, they call him Officer Slam.
Officer Slam, and I'm sure. I mean, and not even on the physical side. When we're talking about abuse, but you know, sexual abuse in the schools. Mm. You know, that's another thing that's going on, and there's other things that I guess that we don't get to see because all the time there aren't cameras there to show us. But now that we do, like I said, have technology, people can, you know, capture these moments that bring attention to the bigger picture.
I thought these were learning environments.
I thought these were safe places for us to be, to learn and grow and study.
No, it's learning how to get slammed. You know, learning how to get. Yeah, I mean, what are we teaching? What are we teaching? And you said safe environment. Okay, you have a school resource officer, which is their title. You have, you know, there to keep people safe, not there to inflict harm, inflict punishment. Mm. I mean, I don't understand, you know, how those dynamics even work. And then this girl, Miss Kenny, that stepped in, she got arrested for trying to help the girl. And she was saying last night, she was saying, you know, I couldn't believe. She said she was crying. Mm-hmm. And she was saying, you know, this is not right. Mm-hmm. She said, I can't believe that. She said, maybe some of them were in shock and maybe some of them were in fear, but I just couldn't sit there and not say anything. And, you know, I salute her for standing up. But let me tell you something. If one of them black boys had stood up, oh, man, we might be reading about him. He might pull out a gun and shot him.
Man, there is just
no. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, a black boy in that classroom could not have stood up and come to her defense. That even speaks to a larger conversation about the fear that those black boys had and the reaction that they would have truly gotten. He would have said, well, okay, son, just goes, oh, no. He probably would have been slamming them all around the room.
Man, he probably would have touched every wall in the classroom. I mean, including the ceiling. You know what I'm saying? But I mean, and it's so crazy, man, that, you know, this is the reality that we face, you know, as people who are sophisticated and intelligent and have an ability to think, you know, that's our crutch and our
But get this, DT. The sheriff was talking about the sheriff was asked the question, you know, was this racially motivated? And his response was, well, he's been dating an African American girl for a long time.
He probably wanted to drag her that way the whole time. He just finally found an outlet for her.
So I'm thinking
this is really sick.
So I'm just thinking. Really. So does that mean, okay, because you date someone outside your you can't be prejudiced? No, it's impossible for me to be. So is that the litmus test? You know, I dated a black woman. Oh, I slept with a black woman. So obviously, you know, I cannot be prejudiced. What are you talking about? I like black booties. I can't be prejudiced. I mean, that's ridiculous, man, for him to even insinuate that somehow that's not racist because he dated someone that is not of his race.
But people in the past have done the same thing to justify, you know, their feelings about black folks. It's like, you know, if I have a black friend, somehow that's equal to me not being racist. You know, I've never even said a racist joke. You know, I'm cool with the blacks. You know what I mean?
I'm cool with the colors.
Yeah, so that's how can I be racist? I have plenty of black friends. I mean, we all got black friends, you know. Parts of these people may be black. They don't even understand it yet.
And again, I don't want to reduce everything down to racism. But and if you say to me, well, you know, was this racially motivated? Well, I would say there's some implicit bias here. I don't know him. I'm not going to call him a racist. But what I will say is if you think the explanation for it not being racist is because he dated a black person, I would say that's racist in itself. And so, yes, all of this plays into the American landscape. We were built on, again, the subjugation of people from Africa. We were nourished by slavery. We were nourished by mass incarceration. We were nourished by second-class citizenship. And you know what? And we flourish by the haves and the have-nots. And so it still remains in our society, this demarcation against black and white and brown people. And so, yes, this plays out. Yeah, it may have been in South Carolina. But, man, what's up with South Carolina, man? Let's just go there for a minute.
It's a hot spot right now. Oh. But, man, it's just like what you're talking about. Like, why did he have to take that stance in that particular situation, in that particular place, in that particular school? Because those, I don't know. Do you know the demographic of the school there?
No, I don't.
But I wonder if, you know, that was a class full of white children, what his stance would have been like. Would he have had to take such a a grunt and handle the situation the same way.
I would like to know whether or not
are there statistics these, on these things?
Yeah, these incidences happening in predominantly affluent schools. And I would beg to differ to say no, because it's a different culture. It's not that those schools are better, it's a different culture. Man, when you walking through metal detectors, okay, you walking through
went through that my whole school.
It changes the game up for you. I mean, it changes the environment for you, because now you're conscious. You're conscious of all of these things that normally you wouldn't have to be aware of. And so I think it does, I think it adds to the situation. Now, I know I hear the critics out there that saying that, you know, she didn't comply, and you never know, you know, you can't treat teens now like, you know, they can, you know, they can kill you, they can this, they can that. You know what, man, that's all irrelevant to this situation, okay? What they should have did, they had an expert on, like you said, they could have brought in somebody else to deal with her. They could have just, if this was that serious, they should have dismissed all the other students,
yeah,
and then dealt with her in a way that didn't embarrass her in front of her friends. That, matter of fact, they said this student is very quiet. She doesn't hardly say anything.
The girl was 120 some pounds, man.
She could have been having a difficult day.
There could have been so many other things that went wrong.
Absolutely.
In that situation. Had he bent that chair over the wrong way and broke that girl's neck.
Absolutely.
Or rolled her body over into it and broke her leg. Or, you know, whatever, man. But in those moments, people are not thinking about the possibility of their action. And that's the sad part, that we have to teach grown folks these very fundamental and basic child skills that you learn just to be able to sustain and cope with everyday life.
Well, if I'm a student in that school, particularly in that teacher's class, this is what I realize moving forward. If you tell me to do something and I don't do it, that's what's going to happen to me. You're not going to talk to me like I'm a human being. You're not going to try to figure out. I might have an issue going on. Mm. Okay. It might be mental illness. Okay. Mm. I might be dealing with something, but your response is, you have not complied, so I'm going to get a police officer in here to make you comply.
To scare you.
That, guess what? That's American education, is it? Mm. I mean, is this what we're saying? And one thing we're going to talk about in our second half, man, the world is watching us.
Yeah.
The world is watching America. And I'm here to tell you, folks, you need to understand. You think that the world is looking at us through these rosy colored glasses like America's great. Wake up.
They used to.
These are the images that are going across the airwaves. Mm. We're slamming our kids. You know, we're incarcerating some of the best in our society. I mean, we're killing young people each and every day on the streets. Not just white cops killing black teens, but blacks killing blacks and whites killing whites. We got mass shootings happening all over the place. These are the images that are going out across the pond. And guess what? It's hurting America's image.
And I think it's important that we look at it on that macro scale, because it's so easy for us to only deal with what's on our street, so to speak. And with that mindset, you don't see, you know, the poisonous view that we show the rest of the world and how we act. You know, what's really going on around here? Well, we're supposed to be the number one country in the world.
Number one country in the world. Is that true? I don't know about that, brother.
I don't know.
I would beg
you've
to differ.
You've been all around the world.
Well, there was a time where America was greatly respected. One thing I'll say as we're going into break here, we're going to come back with a sound bite from Governor Christie. But one thing I want to say going into this break that stuck out to me in Wales, in a very interesting conversation, they said it would be hard to convince people in Europe that there is racial problems in America.
Wow.
We're going to talk about that. Hang on. Don't go nowhere. We'll be right back.
Be sure to like us on our Facebook page, One Mic, One Voice Podcast. Follow us on Twitter, @1Mic_1Voice. And be sure to visit our website to get all of our content at onemiconevoice.com. Reach out to us on the email, dt@onemiconevoice.com or Michael Eric Owens @onemiconevoice.com.
Welcome back to the One Mic, One Voice show. We're going to get to what I was just talking about, but I want to make an announcement. We are One Mic, One Voice. We are launching a book campaign. And, you know, we're living in a climate where racial profiling has gone on in so many different places. And to much of our dismay, we've heard so many people even question the validity of racial profiling. And so we're sending a call out. We want to do a compilation of black men to write a 2 to 3 page example of when they were racially profiled. Talk about that situation. Talk about how you felt about it. Talk about how racial profiling is still very prevalent in your life. And we're going to be putting this out on our Facebook page as well as our website, and we're still playing around, me and DT, with the title, but we think it's going to be something like racial profiling from a black man's perspective. We want society to understand that this has just not been a problem that's created by Ferguson and Baltimore and locales like that. This has been a problem that's been around for generations, and we want to get your story. We want to get it out there. We want to continue this conversation to inform and educate those on the outside that clearly think that these are isolated incidents. One mic, one voice. I said when we left the break, you know, being over in Wales, the statement was made. It would be difficult to convince folks in Europe that we have racial problems in America. And I said, well, of course, to me, right? And to you, we're going, how could that possibly be? But I had a chance to spend 2 weeks in Wales, and I had the opportunity.
For those who don't know, where is Wales?
Wales is actually near London. It was the first country conquered by the British, and it's about 3 hours from London. I was in Swansea, which is southern Wales. It's about 6 hours from Scotland, to give you some geography there. So I was curious. I'm saying, so why, you know, could this possibly be the case? They said, well, what we see coming out of America is that blacks are doing great. And they named Denzel Washington and Halle Berry, and they talked about the rappers and the hip hop artists, and they talked about the athletes that are doing so good. You know, the anomalies in our society, right? They talked about that as being the measurement, and they said Ferguson and Baltimore, they were perplexed by those. So those were, to them, were isolated incidents that. How could that happen in America, because blacks are doing so well? What are your thoughts, DT?
Well, first of all, it's very, very exciting to me to be able to travel and see what other people are thinking, to see how they live and see, you know, kind of what their idea of what American life is like. Because you go someplace and it's like, oh, my God, you guys walk on gold streets, you know what I'm saying? And some places it's like, man, yeah, we know about America.
Yeah.
And so... That's first. It's always good to get out and see, you know, what the conversation is in these different places. Number two, in regard to us being in regard to us doing well, I think Wales may need to come over here and spend just maybe 30 minutes and see how many racial problems they could point out in that amount of time. We've had some really great strides. I think everybody that is even contribution to this conversation does the cause good, because we get a chance to let other people know, you know, what's happening. So even though they do not know right now what's occurring here in America, they have access to the internet and can access, you know, the websites and the podcasts and these different things that give you education about what the reality is here in America. But I will also say that there are issues on every block in America in regard to race. I mean, you just cannot, and what I mean is, that may not be true. What I mean is that you cannot escape that reality of racism being present, racism being prevalent, racism being something that you do not come in contact with in some shape or form throughout your life here.
Oh, absolutely. And of course, when they made that statement, of course, you know this, and if they make that statement to you, class was in session, right?
Yeah, right.
Okay, we about to go to school because now they are educated. But you're right. I mean, every day we deal with racism, and what we mean by racism, folks, is not every day somebody's calling us the N-word or somebody. That's not what I'm talking about. The subtleties of racism exists in the boardrooms. It exists in classrooms. It exists all over this country. And people need to understand, if you can understand this, a country was built upon race. It was built upon race. It's in the genetic fabric of our country, and you're not going to get away from it. The best thing we can do is deal with it and talk about it. Mm-hmm. But the question came to my mind, and I even asked one of my colleagues over there. I said, you know, it's interesting because is it our job to educate the world on our condition? I mean, how would that benefit? How would that benefit us if in Wales they knew the truth about what was going on? Would that truly benefit us, or is it just like something that really doesn't matter in the scheme of black equality and equal opportunity for all in this country?
That's a really huge question. And I'll put it this way. When you just asked me that, what I immediately thought about was countries who ask Americans to look at the way that their lives are in regard to when you see a commercial that has the kids with the flies all around. And they're saying, help these kids out. They need food. They need water. They need clothes. They need these things that are going to help them feel equal, that are going to help them feel some sort of purpose for the life that they have to live in other places. So I think what you're asking about Americans being able to stretch back our knowledge to what's going on to other countries, it has that same reciprocal kind of benefit, you know, just, I guess, depending on what the information is. But in regards to what we're talking about right now, it has a huge benefit for them to see what the reality is, because you have a lot of people who are over there breaking their necks to come over here. And when they get here, it's like, wow,
bam,
I had no idea it was like this.
Boom.
And so before you do take that step, you know, educate yourself and figure out what it is that was really occurring before you, you know.
Before you take that step, you might be sliding across the classroom somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. Man.
You know, the land of the free.
It ain't all milk and honey, you know what I mean?
No, one thing I was saying, we're going to come back to Wales because I want to talk a little bit, but we're going to listen at this clip. But one thing I will say, man, I missed America, you know, with all our problems and all the struggles that we have. It's home, you know, contrary to what, Donald Trump says, I should, you know, go back to Africa if I don't think Black Lives Matter here. Well, you know what? Mr. Trump, I spent 13 years in the United States Navy, okay? What did you do? You got millions of dollars from your father and went into business for yourself. So I wish I had that, but I had to go serve my country, and I'm very proud for doing that. So I want you to listen to this clip, and then we're going to talk about this guy and break down exactly what his views are when it comes to race in this country and the president as he relates to it, and also the Black Lives Matter movement.
Let me ask you this. Governor of New Jersey, you deal with police and crime issues. FBI Director James Comey said something interesting. He suggested that police across the country may be more reluctant to crack down on crime because of what's the so-called Ferguson effect, named after the Michael Brown murder in Ferguson, Missouri. Do you see any of that in New Jersey, that reticence, because it's now become such a politicized issue?
I don't see it in New Jersey because the leader of New Jersey tells the police officers to go out and do their job. without exception.
And they're doing it.
And they are. And you've seen it in a city like Camden, where in the last 3 years after we replaced the police department there, John, and backed them up completely, all the political folks, murder rate is down 61% in the last 3 years in Camden. Yet you see murders up 19% in Chicago and up 11% in New York, and the murder of a police officer. The problem is this. There's lawlessness in this country. The president encourages this lawlessness. He encourages it.
Encourages it how?
Well, by his own rhetoric. He does not support the police. He doesn't back up the police. He justifies Black Lives Matter. I mean,
but Black Lives Matter shouldn't be justified at all.
Listen, I don't believe that that movement should be justified when they're calling for the murder of police officers. No,
but they're not calling for the murder of police officers.
Sure, they are. They've been chanting in the streets for the murder of police officers.
Well, individuals have, but the Black Lives Matter is about.
Listen, you know, John, that's what the movement is creating. And the president of the United States is justifying that. But not only that, he hasn't backed up police officers from the minute he's gotten into office. And we could cite instance after instance. And there's a lawlessness about no sanctuary cities. We should not have sanctuary cities in this country. The president countenances that. That type of lawlessness sets a tone. And then when you have liberal mayors like Bill de Blasio in New York, who are basically tying one hand behind the back of police officers, and then we have folks, murder rate up 11%, police officers in New York City being murdered. Let me tell you very clearly, I'll be a president who will back up law enforcement, back up the police officers, because I was a law enforcement officer. I know how hard these jobs are, and they need to be backed up. When there are bad cops, they need to be prosecuted. Like there are bad lawyers and bad doctors and bad engineers. They all need to be prosecuted when they do something wrong. But our police officers are putting their lives on the line every day. Let's back them up so we can end the real violence in this country, which is happening in the streets of our cities all across this country.
What did he just say?
He said a lot of stuff. Oh,
what he should have said is, I'm polling at 1%, and I really have no influence. I know I'm on your show, and I'm talking out the side of my neck. I mean, what did this guy? This is Governor Christie. What did he say?
Was that really a part of his campaign trail? You think? Is he still like in the fight for real? Like, is this a part of, you know, him?
He shouldn't even be in the next debate. I mean, they should just pull his debate card right now and say, look, it's been revoked. I mean, he's saying that the president does what?
He doesn't back up police officers. How can that be? And this man has spent his time in the trenches of Chicago alongside police officers or law enforcement and had used that as a way to propel himself into presidency. So there had to be some respect for police officer or law enforcement at some point.
And he said the president is also inciting violence.
He's saying he's promoting the Black Lives Matter movement.
So indirectly, okay, he's inciting this sort of hatred toward cops and so forth.
Because the Black Lives Matter movement is calling for the death of police officers.
And you know what? The interviewer, I give him credit because he was trying to help him. Mm-hmm. You know, he's trying to say, really? Let me help you here because you sound like an idiot. Really? Mm-hmm. I mean, come on. I mean, how are you going to take a sound bite from individuals and then you're going to infer that to the entire group and say that the Black Lives Matter movement are calling for the death of cops? I mean, here is a guy that is running at 1%, let me just say that again, for the presidency of the United States. And you and all you can do is come on TV and be a mouthpiece for this skewed ideology that demonizes the existing president, that demonizes liberal point of views. Man, you know what? It's why in this country can't we disagree with some sort of civility and also rationality?
I think that is because there are so many ideas floating around there. People that are here, different information on this side, here's something else over here. And it's like they don't really know what they believe in. They don't really know what to agree upon because they don't know what they really truly believe in. I think what happens around in our society, it speaks to a different or a deeper problem that we have with our value system. And what I mean is that, you know, a place like America that has, you know, a Bible Belt and has been built on, you know, the quote unquote Christian value, you know, there should be some principle there. There should be some type of value system there that influences us in a way that is progressive, that is positive. as opposed to us always bickering about these small things that end up dividing us more and putting us deeper into the situation.
You hate the country. Okay, you hate police officers. I mean, what type of, how does that create dialogue? That's mm-hmm. my point. That shuts people down. I mean, in other words, you're not even saying you want to engage with me. Okay, you're not even, what you're simply saying is that I'm right and you're wrong. Okay, I mean, that doesn't move the country forward. You are exactly correct. I mean, if we're based in these Christian values, this Christian theology. Matter of fact, they're sending missionaries to America to save America from itself. So let's just put that out there. But if we are living in this these Christian principles or values, man, I tell you what, that's a poor example. Mm-hmm. That's a poor example, man, because to me it is based in hate.
And I agree. And it shouldn't be that way, right?
I mean, why can't, aren't we, man, we have the ability to think and to reason. Why can't I disagree with my fellow citizen in a way that preserves his or her dignity? That, man, who, you know, the people that want to tear down this country, they show you they do. Okay, those are the Timothy McVeighs, okay, of the world. Those are the Charles Mansons. Those are, you see them. The average citizen that's running around here, they don't want to tear this country down. They want to see this country flourish. They just want to be part of that flourishing. You know what I mean? That's where the struggle comes in. That, you know what? The boat is going down the road. I want to be on the boat. I don't want to burn the boat down. Yeah. And in this ideology, what we talk about back and forth is, you want to burn the boat down. Food, I'm in the boat. I will burn the boat down, man. I'm in the boat. No, I think we need to go this direction. Although you think we need to go that direction, we need to talk about that. Mm-hmm. We need to have a conversation about that. And this is what I talk about, man, being overseas and folks looking at us. DT, they asked me, is Donald Trump really running for president?
Oh, they didn't think it was real.
No, they didn't think it was real.
I guess I would have been in question too if I was.
Yeah,
the
they were like,
outside,
"So is,
like,
this,
oh, really? Is this?
I mean, we
real?
Know he's a celebrity. So is this? Is he really running for president?" Wow. And I said, "You know what? I'm starting to figure it out myself. You know, but I think it's real."
As people who actually live here, we too have that same question: Is this cat really on the ballot this year?
But yeah, they were confused about whether or not he was serious about running because they couldn't believe. Number one, okay. For them, they're totally beyond the same-sex marriage thing, way beyond that. They're way beyond a woman's right to choose, way beyond that. Now, you might say, okay, we live in America. America is the moral standard. Okay, that's why we kill more people and incarcerate more people than any industrial country in the world. Okay? That's why, well, let me back up here for a minute, okay? So, confused about Donald Trump. Confused about the way that we attack immigration. Okay, not that they don't have immigration issues over there, but the idea of kicking out 11 million people, I mean, why would you ever do that? You know, how is that ever possible?
Building a wall to protect the American people from the Mexicans.
I mean, our political dysfunctionality is a joke across the world. It is a joke. And I'm embarrassed. I was embarrassed, DT. I was embarrassed, Richard. I was embarrassed sitting over there and they're looking at our country in through this light. But I can't deny it. I mean, the guy's up there saying he wants to send people out of the country. The guy's up there talking all this. I can't deny it. I mean, the guy's up there saying, oh, and get this. Many of them believe the president is a Muslim. Hmm. Now, and this is what, but they don't have any problem with it. Now, this is what's so funny, right? I'm like, dude, okay, the president is from, I'm from Milwaukee. I know the church he goes to. He's been going there for 23 years. It's a Christian church. But the very fact that I have to defend the fact that he is a Christian makes me demonize Islam, which is wrong when I'm living in a country that is freedom of religion. What does it matter? And to them, they're like, they were shocked when I told them, no, he's a Christian. They were like, really?
Wow.
I mean, these are the isn't it something?
I'm blown away right now.
Amazing. Amazing, man. Wow. Amazing. Another thing. When I was over there, okay, we know their police officers don't carry weapons. We know that. But I didn't see, they don't patrol.
Nobody I mean, they, on the beat?
No, they're not out on the beat. They're not, you know, you see them in highly populated areas, but they're not out on the freeways with radar detectors. Okay, they're not pulling behind you and doing all those. We live in a police state. They're everywhere.
Everywhere.
Unless you need them. Okay, let's just be real. I'm always like, man, when the dude just ran the red light, you know? I come close, I get pulled over. But what I'm saying is, no, man, I it was amazing to me to see the lack of police presence.
Okay? How did it make you feel? I mean, did you feel still like you were?
Man, I felt safe, man. Even in London, the lack of police presence. When I was in London, I was just amazed. And somebody would say, well, you were there. No, no, no. I was there for 2 weeks. And I think I would have, you know what, come to America for 2 weeks and see if you see some police officers. Okay? The lack of police presence.
And you know what's funny, though, that you say that? I remember going different places and noticing, you know, when there weren't that many police around. Like, that was just some type of weird observation I would make every now and then. Like, a part of Texas or, you know, wherever. Like, man, yeah. I ain't noticed that many police around here. I wonder what's, you know, what's good. This must be a pretty cool place. I must be pretty safe around here. But, you know, that's funny that even that you mentioned we live in such a police environment, society, that's an observation that you make because you do feel that pressure all the time. And, you know, whether it be consciously or subconsciously, now being in a place where you don't, you know, have that same environment, it's like, man, this is kind of nice, you know?
Yeah. It is, and again, not that Wales or England don't have their own problems, but violence is nothing compared to what it is in this country. Mm-hmm. Okay, I would tend to say I would make the argument it's not scientific. I'll be like Trump now. The polls are not scientific because he's losing. Right? This is not scientific, but I would say the very presence, the amount of police presence, I think, causes to the tension that exists in our society. In other words, they change the conversation when they show up. They change the climate when they show up. It's not like, you know, the president made a statement, which I agree with. I disagree with. The president made the statement about the fact that There is no us versus them. Well, you know what? In La La Land, I would agree with that. But no, in reality, with all the killing that's going on, when I get pulled over, it's me versus them. Okay, it's not. I don't get pulled over by somebody that I think is in my corner. Okay, so yeah, that mentality is there. Whether it's right or wrong, I understand. We shouldn't look at it like that way. But the reality is, when I have an encounter, I feel like I'm all alone, and he's on that side, and I'm on this side, and it might go down wrong for me. Not for him, okay, because I ain't got no weapon, you know. I'm not trying to do wrong, but my mentality is it might go down wrong for me. I don't like that. So, yes, it's very much us versus them, unless you can start having the conversation and we can again build a bridge, because the bridge has been burned between the community and law enforcement. Yeah, and if you want to be naive,
trust back up.
It has been burned, and it's got to be built back up. We just can't reconnect it, DT. Mm-hmm. It's got to be built brick by brick, you know, mortar by mortar, because it no longer exists. I mean, again, Wells, they have their problems, but I would also say this. They told me, if you mention your religion, your religious beliefs or faith as a politician, it's political suicide.
Wow.
Religion plays no part in their politics. Mm-hmm. Man, just think about it. If we could put, I mean, again, I'm a person of faith. You know, we're all people of faith. Okay, I don't care. You know, even the atheists believe that there is no God. I mean, that is faith in itself. Okay, mm-hmm. So we are people of faith. However, man, it is so twisted in our political system where people are voting for, look at Donald Trump. I mean, what all of a sudden now he religious. You know, he Presbyterian. He's talking, his best book is the Bible. When they ask him what scripture he is, he said, well, he don't want to just pick one of them. That's private to him. Come on, man. You could have said Jesus wept. You could say, you know, come on, man. I'm like, really? Right. I mean, man. So religion is a joke in our political process, man. And people that are clinging to that and voting according to somebody's faith, I'm telling you, I could sell you something that could make me real rich. And guess what? You would get just as much value out of it because it would be nothing.
But I think, you know, I'm asking myself this question. You know, it goes back to the principle of the value system that we have here in America. So anything built on that, whether that be our political system and whatever else that comes with that, is there a foundation for religion, or is there a foundation for that idea or those ideas to be entered into these different arenas?
I don't think in a political system. You know, Jesus said, render to Caesar what is Caesar's, render to God what is God's. And I think he made that dichotomy between the political and the godly, and the fact that, you know what, that's man's realm. Let man do what he want to do. This is God's realm. Now, I'm not saying that our faith does not allow for us to carry out certain duties and function. But that should not be vote for me because I'm a Christian. Mm-hmm. A vote for me because I believe that way. Mm-hmm. You know what? We got, look at that Westboro church that's going around here. They call themselves Christian. They're going around here picketing soldiers' funerals, okay, which is ridiculous, okay? Yeah. And look at the KKK forever. They've been burning crosses talking about they're Christian. Mm-hmm. So just because this person puts their hand up and said, I'm a Christian, what is that? Remove that. What are you going to do? What are you going to do in this social society in which we live? That's what I want to know. How are you going to make life better for the average person, the average American? What are you going to do about education? What are you going to do about health care? What are you going to do about these issues that are plaguing all families, all people? And that's what I want to know. Whether you go home and read the Quran or read the Bible or don't do either, that's irrelevant to me. What I want to do is, what will you do to stand up for the Constitution and to make sure that everybody has the same opportunity that those in the privileged class have? That's what I want to know. Okay, you can quote every scripture in the book that you want to, and then you can go out there and do whatever you want to do. That has nothing to do with the political process. And so for me, man, it was refreshing to hear that religion played no key role in their political process. Now, I know some folks going to be mad at me. Here they go, man, what you talking about, man? We need a God-fearing person in there. Man, how you know they fear God?
Yeah, what does that mean?
Okay, you understand what I'm saying?
Though, what does that mean when you say that?
Because Jesus, hold on, let me back up, and we about to close down, but let me back up here for a minute. Jesus was a socialist. Okay, now I didn't mess some folks up, right? He was a socialist, okay? Listen. Number one, he could have came back as a king. He could have came back as anything he wanted to come back with. What did he come back as? As a carpenter, okay? And the man didn't own a house, okay? What did he do? He fed everybody, okay? He gave to everybody as they needed, okay? When the disciples pulled everything together, they told everybody to go sell everything that they have, okay, and bring it back, and we to distribute it to those in need, okay? That's socialism. Hmm. So to sit up here and say, I'm a Christian, and you talk about capitalism, you talk about the haves and the haves not, and we don't need to have Social Security. Jesus said, you know what? When you did it to the least among you, you did it unto me. When I was in prison, you came to visit me. When I was hungry, you fed me. Listen, folks, it's in the book. So don't sit up here and tell me, okay? If you really want to have religion and politics, then start doing what the book says to do, because we ain't doing what the book says to do. As a matter of fact, let me say this even, brother. The book says this. Pray for your enemies. How many you Christian folks out there that's running around here with that book praying for your president?
Oh, Hey, now we're going to go back to
the meter. Yeah, the meter's up.
Let me see.
The meter's up. Hey, we... hey.
Yellow? Orange?
I'm going to bring it down. Pour some water on me, Richard. Yeah, there we go. I'm cooling down now. hey, man. But being back, though, you know, man, I'm so excited. It's energy. You know, it's that energy being off the mic. Don't let me off the mic no more, Richard.
It's like caging a pit bull for 2 weeks. And then you pull him out and ask him, is he hungry? He's like, well, of course he is. And guess what he wants?
But all, as you said, DT, man, we need to get out. Get across the world, you know, do some traveling, you know, meet people of different cultures and backgrounds. And we even went to the parliament in Wales, man. I went to the capital in Cardiff, man. The parliament is beautiful. Matter of fact, their parliament is all glass.
Man, you know, the architecture there is just...
Oh, man. I got some... Matter of fact, I'm going to be posting some pictures on Facebook. I was waiting until we did this episode. But the parliament is all glass because they said they want to have transparency. Mm. So you can look in and see them conducting business at all times. And it's not like you can't get to it. You know, we walk right up on it. You know, the White House, good luck, you know. But, okay, our police officers carrying guns, and they're not. And I can walk right up on the parliament. What's wrong with that picture? America? America.
America.
America. America. I love you, America.
America.
I love you, America. Hey, man,
Man, you have anything you want to kind of wrap up with? Closing thought or anything like that?
Well, you know, I would say that it's great to be back, you know, in the country. I like traveling abroad, but there's no place like home. You know, Dorothy, I guess, you know.
Dorothy.
Yeah, my heels together. There's no place like home. And I missed America. You know, sometimes we talk about America like she a female or a male, right? I miss America. And it's a thrill to be back with you and Richard in the studio, and folks, I just want to say we appreciate again a shout out DT to folks listening from on the continent in Europe, I mean in South America, all over this wonderful planet. We just appreciate your input. Keep it coming, you know. Keep reaching out to us and sharing topics that you want us to talk about. But it's just nice to be back in the studio, brother.
Man, it is so good to have you back. I'm really happy to be back in the saddle doing what we do
on
the One Mic, One Voice show. Man, please visit our website, onemiconevoice.com. Hit us up on the Facebook, One Mic, One Voice podcast. Lots of media there. You can find our podcast episodes there on our website. Links to send us messages about what you think about the show. Reach me on email, dt@onemiconevoice.com or michael.eric.owens@onemiconevoice.com. And we're going to keep it real smooth for ya.
Because as always, history will speak of us. Somewhere in the distant future, a scribe will reach down deep into the archives of our time. And what will she find? Will she discover that we overcame our differences? Will she find that out of many, we became one? Or will she find that we saw nothing and remain a divided people? Yes, history will speak of us.